The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Hello, everyone. This is BL, and welcome to Dwayne's exciting new series, which I seem to have cut off the top of the name, Awakening the Higher Mind. I want to go through the normal protocols, slide protocols here. First, before I turn it back over to Dwayne, everybody should be on mic and speakers, and it looks to me like you all are. I can see that on the dashboard. That's good. You're going to have a little button right here to raise your hand. Should you want to help read when we ask for that, or should you have a question? You have a mic here. Everybody is muted by the organizer right now. If you do have a question, we will unmute you at that time. And we ask that when you're finished speaking that you put yourself back on self-mute, or we will do it for you. We have to try and minimize the amount of background noise and everything that we get. So raise your hand there. You click the green mic either here or here, and that will self-mute you. It'll show red when you're muted, and when it's open, it will show green. So you'll be able to tell that fairly easily. Same with the hands, okay? The arrow actually points in the direction that's available to you. So if it's a green arrow pointing upwards, it means your hand is down and you have the capability to put it up. If it's a red arrow pointing downwards, it means your hand is up and you have the capability to put it down. And you also have the capability to type us questions. There's a little questions block down here, and all you have to do is undock it by hitting this little button right here, and then you can type a question to us. It may take us a little while to see it and respond to you, but we will try and do that as we go along. Dwayne would like readers, but he will ask you at the time, and if you'll just raise your hand then. He's also asked that you let him finish a thought before he asks for questions, but he will ask for questions, you know, if anybody has any questions throughout the presentation. We'll try and help him look at for the hands and look for questions and all of that kind of good stuff like we normally do. Okay, I'm going to turn it over to you, Dwayne. Everybody's excited to hear you, not me.
Thank you, BL, and welcome to the first webinar titled Awakening the Higher Mind and the Intuition. I would like to thank all of you for taking time from your busy schedules to participate in this work that is so important that the Moya School is undertaking, expanding its influence worldwide and sharing these very important esoteric insights and ideas. Now, before we begin, I'd like to make a few qualifying statements. The first one, as BL mentioned, we're not going to be randomly calling on anybody to read, and we may at some point ask people if they would like to read certain comments or text, but we won't drop on you out of the blue. If you have a cell phone and you're listening through a tablet, it may be a little difficult, and I apologize for not making this comment earlier when we sent out notices, because This presentation is going to be loaded with symbols, tabulations, images, and most importantly, animations. And unlike most presentations, the text actually support the images in the animations versus the other way around. As we move through this, we're going to do a number of little mini meditations. And I'm convinced that it's not the length of the meditation, but the potency of it that determines its value. Any meditations or suggestions that I make around the centers, initiation, and different things are not meant for you in any way to change your present work or your own meditative program. It's just sort of supplementary information that can help you get clarity with your own process, where you're at and where you're going on this path of initiation. Now, normally, a good coherent presentation sort of focuses on one theme and expands on that. We're going to do something a little more different here. We're going to sort of be sampling some key concepts and ideas from HPB's works as well as DK. And we know that HPB was the forerunner. She founded, with her wonderful contributions, the really first major Western occult impact. And then that was followed by Alice A. Bailey with her more intermediate teachings. And the Tibetan has suggested that there's another course to run, that moving into this century, there are going to be new presentations, and it's going to be a final sort of consummating contribution. And that will be one of the dominant themes of this series of presentations, what that might look like. And I'm very, very interested in all of your thoughts and ideas around these different subjects. So having said that, let's go to the next number one here, what we're sort of attempting to achieve. And information is very, very important, particularly correct information. But too much of it can take us away from making inroads into the abstract mind and later developing the intuition. Now, I'm going to be passing along a lot of information. So I know this sounds somewhat contradictory, but it'll become clearer later why that is. So I'm asking everyone to disregard any information that may not be relevant, that really sort of doesn't resonate with you. Don't struggle with some of these ideas and concepts. Just take what's useful for you and disregard the rest. When I have people go to view my commentaries at my website, Lightweaver, I ask them to go through the commentaries and look at the pictures. And when they get one that really sort of calls their fancy or intrigues them, then read the text underneath. So we're going to try to approach this whole idea more from an abstract point of view, but always using the important building aspect of the lower mind. Now, one of the things that is very common about HPB and DK's works is the affirmation that symbols are really the true coming language, the language of initiates as they now exist and how they communicate amongst themselves on the inner planes. They do it through a language of color, sound, vibration, number, heat, light. And we also know that at this time, historically, there's going to be a great influx of healing light from the Devic and angelic kingdoms. And part of these commentaries is going to be devoted to where is the crossover point between these two kingdoms? What are the tools? What are the techniques? What are the alignments that are going to be required? And as you all know, DK has laid out some important information and techniques to assist us. And when we study these occult symbols, we have to go inside them, as DK and HPB have affirmed. We have to get inside them and with a creative imagination, see them from the inside out rather than from the outside in. Somewhat of a paradox, because often you need to do both at the same time. Sometimes it can be sequential, sometimes it can be spontaneous, where the both techniques are happening in your perceptions. And last, in this opening, all progress on the path of evolution is achieved by the right use of the imagination or the picture-making faculty. Energy, we know, follows thought, and a visualized image is the first step towards creating a bridge from the known to the unknown and from effect to causes. And I might add here that this is another objective of this series of webinars, is to show the connection between the macrocosmic link and its microcosmic reflection. And DK has expanded extensively on the law of analogy, and even more importantly, the law of correspondence, which is the esoteric background of the affirmation as above, so below, in great and exacting detail. In fact, DK says the law of correspondence is infallible if followed with scientific occult accuracy. And we are going to strive for scientific accuracy, but at the same time, to go back to our opening statements, with the understanding that all of the information and minutia that we pull together has to be synthesized for the abstract and in higher mind to open, and then the intuition to pour down through. Okay, good. So I'm going to put out to the group right now, if there's any questions or comments they would like to contribute at this point.
I don't see any comments, and I don't see any raised hands right this second.
Okay.
How about you, Rose?
One of the things that has impressed me with the Tibetan's works over the years is that he constantly stops and affirms that he is hindered by the limitations of language. That this new science of energy and force is going to require this new Aquarian science of energy and force pouring in with the seventh ray influence is going to require a whole new terminology, a whole new science, and one that will fuse ancient yogic traditions with new breakthroughs in the different scientific departments. And they are in all of them. I am particularly interested in quantum mechanics and electricity and a few areas that outline what's taking place, but there are so many, it is absolutely mind-boggling. DK has affirmed that this whole question of teachings and presentations of the ageless wisdom requires revitalization, and one that is suited to a growing mental grasp of a more scientific and modern mind. This is another amazing quote from the Tibetan. Are there any volunteers out there that would like to read this to the group?
Yes, we have Walter. Please go ahead, Walter.
I would have this group, which I am training, forget the details about initiation as presented so oft by the mystery monger and the emotional person, and concentrate the far more factual realities of meaning, cause, and being. The old and outworn presentations were the product of the concrete mind and are therefore crystallizing in their effects and distorting in their results. They are also evocative of spiritual selfishness and isolation, as well as of astral curiosity. The new approach, which I seek to indicate, makes its appeal to the abstract mind and to the soul, whose values are sound, and eventually to the intuition.
Is there anyone in the group that would like to make a comment on that quote from the Tibetan?
I don't see any hands or comments.
One of the things that has impressed me about the Tibetan's works is his articulation on the fifth ray and how it can be excruciating in its ability to take things apart and break them down. And yet, the fifth ray, when you see it esoterically, relates to these solar angels that came in waves from Venus. And they're really beings of light. And they're really souls descending into incarnation to assist humanity at this time of crises. You have many levels of the mind. And when you build your bridges, you go from the lower mind to the higher mind, the abstract mind, the intuitive mind. And as Michael Robbins has so eloquently expressed in many of his lectures at the university, here over webinars and in the spring festivals, the mind of God is immensely complex and expansive. And we don't want to demean it, but at the same time, we want to be notified and corrected when we're falling into the trap of too much information, as opposed to when we should be making subjective changes in our inner bodies, in our auric fields, and in our building of bridges, our Antakarana rainbow development. Okay, now we see this abstract mind in all of the Tibetan's works, and there are many departments, and I've just listed a few at the bottom. Esoteric astrology, premier science, of the new Aquarian age, most ancient of the esoteric sciences, and we have the new teachings on healing, the new teachings on meditation, discipleship training, the new teachings on the will, and the new psychology, just to mention a few. And all of this vast body of information has poured through HBB and Alice Bailey for our benefit to take all of these different areas to new heights of understanding in our personal development, but most importantly, in the development of the group. One of the limitations of many aspirants and probationers is that they become very infatuated and overly obsessive about their own individual contributions in development. And in a sense, we might say that's unavoidable, but that is not really to be considered a part of the group life, because later, when the disciple, or should I say the aspirant and the neophyte and the probationer mature into the disciple, they realize it's the group. And it's the group that takes us forward, and it's the power of the group that brings us into new territory. And as we participate in these webinars, we're telepathically linking up with some really amazing minds and hearts. And even though we're at vast distances apart, we are able to momentarily come together and feel this wonderful contribution that is growing exponentially as we do our studies and work. Are there any comments from the group on this particular quotation? Or comment that I just made?
I don't see any questions or hands yet, so.
Okay. Now we're going to move into a few images. And as you can see, by looking at your computer screens, we have three images. The top left one is sort of an earlier depiction of space, and it's more or less as a flat surface. It's sort of two-dimensional. Now, it does hint that there are other dimensions, but it really is more of a two-dimensional sort of graph, or in folks, a two-dimensional sense of response. The next one to the right, the three-dimensional grid of time and space, shows you more of a three-dimensional. And again, to really understand even these simple images, you have to really visualize them rather than just look at them. And then from a two-dimensional to a three-dimensional, you drop down to the last one in the series. And this is an attempt, however frail and limited, to give the observer a sense of the fourth dimension. And we are using a torus vortex sphere. And this is actually taken from a scientific journal. And it's a image that's taken from Penrose Twister, a physicist that did pioneering work around how energy moves on atomic and subatomic levels. And it conforms to these vortical shapes and dynamics that is in constant movement. Well, when you take what quantum mechanics has developed or revealed, and things about the theory of everything and strings and plasma, you find that they parallel so beautifully what the Tibetan has outlined on the different bodies. and what initiation is. And we're not going to go into it too extensively right now because we're just giving an overview that we're later going to expand on atomic and subatomic levels. They're really characterized by magnetic and electrical forces. And these forces are built by these conical shells. And for these shells, these bands of electricity that create these tiny entities, for them to go to the next higher point of radiation, they have to be impacted by something outside of them, a more powerful radiation, more heat, more magnetism, more electricity. And then these discrete bands become so stimulated, they jump to a further outer band. And again, not to go into too much detail, this is exactly what happens during the initiatory experience when you study the Tibetans' work from the position of a quantum physicist. Now, he or she may not come to these conclusions as I have, but for anybody who is trained as an esotericist or an occultist, the parallels are there. This new science that we're waiting for, this new Aquarian occult science, is not just new teachings coming from the inner ashram from some extremely high level. It's also being built simultaneously from the scientific community in the opposite direction. And this is where there's a meeting. And when people say, oh, science is at loggerheads with religion, that is entirely incorrect. If you understand the work like Nassim Harriman, Bruce Lipton, and a number of others are working on or doing, there are immense strides. Okay, are there any questions on that comment or the actual image?
I don't see any hands or questions at this time.
Okay, what we're going to see here is sort of the evolution in very simple terms of the idea of the torus and the vortex. The first one that we see is sort of an early alchemical symbol, and it shows a serpent swallowing its own tail. And that has been an enigma to many, many people, why this is such a powerful alchemical symbol that's used in Gnostic Christianity, white magic, and a whole host of different traditions. And it hints at something very esoteric and something very deep. So let's move sort of from Western Hermetic tradition to more of an Eastern one, where you have the dragon, the serpent eating or swallowing its own tail. Same identical symbology of energy sort of unfolding into or upon itself. In other words, it's trying to invoke a sense of multidimensionalness or fourth dimensional reality, but the tools are so limited at these times historically when these images were produced that, yes, we do get variations and we get upgrades and improvements, but still it is a very, very difficult concept to fully understand unless you have undergone the initiatory experience. And then last but not least, in this little series, we have the symbol of the Theosophical Society a simple version of what HPB sort of outlined in her wonderful work with symbols. And you see the serpent swallowing its tail. It could take weeks to go over all the symbology of that, but we're going to deal mainly with the vortex right now and the sphere. And so what we're going to do next is we're going to take an image that takes sort of all of these, and there are literally thousands of variations of this, and we're going to see through modern computer animation a much closer approximation. Remember the important quote and statement by DK that God geometrizes, and that really is so important and relevant to the second ray disciple because they visualize everything because of their second ray nature. They're on that second ray line, and later we'll study why the astral body is so important along with the mind to create images that are very powerful that can be taken up onto the high mental plane. In other words, we're going to watch an animation shortly, and when we do this, when we observe this, I want the group to do it as a mini meditation. I want you to take this image that we're going to animate, and I want you to sort of breathe it in, sound a silent ohm on the high mental plane, and then breathe in this magnificent image that you're going to see, because this image will take you much closer to the actual reality on its own high plane than, in my opinion, text, and also in the opinion of HPB and DK, living, dynamic symbols that come alive. And they come alive because they are us. And yes, there's no image that we can view externally that can fully summarize who we are, but again, take it onto the high mental plane and feel it. Get inside the very center of it, and you'll see, and I apologize for being redundant, but it's so important, you'll see the serpent swallowing its own tail. You will see energy coming out of energy. You will see light emerging out of light. And if we can, I'm going to try to put a little music with this animation.
Thank you.
It's fascinating when the Tibetan describes the divine ego or the soul or angel as a being of great light, and that it literally palpitates with all the colors of the rainbow, with the dominant ray coloring most prominent. The idea of the divine ego on its own plane flashing forth. And the Tibetan has clearly stated that the ashram of the masters is a vortex in constant motion. The divine ego, with its many petals, are in constant rotation. And as the disciple undergoes initiation, this rotary motion speeds up, becomes more brilliant. And then we move into what the Tibetan calls rotary motion, we know as the third aspect of deity, and cyclic spiral is the second aspect of deity. So when you are looking at this serpent, this torus sort of unfolding onto itself, you are looking at an image that is very, very invocative. And I would like to take credit as an artist for this wonderful animation, but I cannot. And it is a universal animation done by an artist that is unknown and for our use. The symbol of the lotus and the rose in Eastern and Western mysticism and occultism has always been a standard symbol. And one of the reasons for that is more than just its purity and its ability to imbue into the surrounding atmosphere this uplifting fragrance, which is worthy of its own study. But when the first tier reaches its full visual unfolding, another one comes up behind it and opens, and then another one comes up behind it and opens. It unfolds out of itself. And that is a very, very enigmatic and profound statement, something that emerges out of itself. And how else can that be unless that other thing, that other self, that higher influence is hidden? But there's a conduit between us as the attentive personality and this hidden higher mind, solar angel, ashram, master. And we will explore at some additional point where triangles fit in and how triangles are the vortex in its early stages of development. And I want the group to imagine that there's a triangle with three points. These three points are anchored on different levels. The most difficult question the disciple asks often is, how does energy go from one level to another? Where is the Jacob's ladder? Where is the bridge? And we've been given immense insight and creative outlines by the Tibetan on this six stages of building the Antakarana in its higher and lower form. But that, as the Tibetan acknowledges after 30 pages of outlining the Rainbow Bridge, well, of course, you know, this doesn't really exist. This is all really what we use to help humanity who's sort of stuck down there in the lower subplanes of the mental to get up to the abstract levels, to the intuitive levels. And when we go back to the idea of the triangle, we see we are building a bridge from one point to another, and there are three different levels. And we're going from the lowest part of the triangle to the higher parts. But as energy rotates around those three points, it goes faster and faster. And the obstructions are removed for that free flow. And when it is going fast enough around the three points of the triangle, it becomes the vortex. And the vortex is simpler, even though it may seem initially as complex. How does the vortex and the sphere, or the torus, relate to initiation, that we're making something abnormally complex that's very simple? Actually, we're taking something that's extremely complex through the lower mind and making it much more seamless. All the connecting rays and planes, as we will demonstrate visually, are seamlessly connected. So why is it we have been unable, or why is it it's difficult to reach these higher levels of the soul and the triad and the master's ashram? Because of a break in our mental equipment between the fourth subplane of the mental, counting from below up, and the third. There's a gap. And bridge building is key, because the moment you can traverse that gap between those two subplanes of the mental, then the way of the higher evolutions open up to you. And DK says, the higher you go, the more simple it is. And yet we should not confuse occult esoteric simplicity with personality simplicity, because these higher reaches are immensely powerful. Okay, are there any comments on the animation or any of my supportive information?
Wait, I have a question.
Please.
When you're talking about the triangle becoming the rotation becoming faster and faster and faster, and that it creates a vortex, well, that's a really good description for the invocative nature on the six stages of building the Antakarana, that you have to, at the final stages are invocation and evocation. And if you think about a vortex, that's exactly what it is. It's actually, well, probably the vortex itself is probably the evocation, because it becomes like the funnel through which the higher, it links, it bridges the higher and the lower. It becomes sort of like a, you know, like a tornado, or like a, you know, one of those water spouts where it creates this bridge from which, you know, the water from the ocean can go up, and then versus, and also the hot air from above can go down. So it's like, it's sort of like, also in quantum physics, it would be kind of like, you know, collapsing the wave function, because it creates this there's no longer space, you know, where the two points that were once separate are now simultaneous at the same location. And I had never thought of it that way before. So I just thank you for making that correspondence.
Thank you. Are there any other comments or questions?
I don't see any hands or questions.
What Rose has just outlined is something we're going to explore in greater detail. How is the vortex created? And Rose has just sort of given us the foundation of it. If you have a weather system of hot and wet and cold and dry fronts coming into each other's periphery, they don't cancel each other out. They turn upon themselves, and they do this dance. And this is true of all energies that are different. And you have to understand the vortex is really made up of the rays and the planes. And the rays are the second aspect of deity, and the planes are the third aspect. And under certain conditions, they're incompatible. But as evolution proceeds, they become familiar with each other's contribution, and they realize that they have to work together. And this is one of the great mysteries of initiation. Let's just step back a little into the idea of meditation and look at it from a practical point of view. When you meditate, one of the most difficult places to be is when you are creating these strong visualizations with what is called in Patanjali's sutras, seed thoughts. All meditation, at least if you're an esotericist or an occultist, starts with some type of visual image. The question is, how do you get from that visualized image to the actual thing itself that's on a higher level? In other words, how do you bridge that gap? This is a question that has stumped some of the greatest occult minds until you have done that work within your own crucible of your own mind. And that is that you create a visualized image, and through the law of correspondence, when that visualized image is of the right note, the right sound, or the right frequency, it will by law attract the attention of that entity you're trying to fuse with. In other words, the door of initiation is electrical and magnetic in nature. And when you can create in a seventh ray way the right invocation and visualization, it will call down. You'll send up a thread, and that thread, in speaking in human terms, will sort of knock on the door and say, hey, I'm here. Pay attention. I need your light. I need your love. I need your greater radiance to be a greater server. And that's always, of course, the keynote is more power for the group, more power for the work down here on the material plane. So the creative place is, everyone here has struggled with this without exception because it's a law. Now, you may have passed beyond the stage, but it's a very powerful one where you are actively visualizing some image, mantra, thought form, and when you begin to feel the impact or the descent of the very thing that you're invoking, you have to lessen the active visualization to what the Tibetan calls more of an active passive. So you're still actively on the mental plane, but you are discharging out of your auric field, out of your mental field, any lower thought forms. Because these lower mental thought forms, which got you up to this point, now have to acquiesce to the very grounding of these higher energies. And when they move into your auric field, you will feel this elevation, and this greater light will discharge out of the auric field any limitations on the emotional plane, on the mental plane, and in healing, even on the physical etheric. So to go back to what Rose said earlier, when you create a vortex, what you do is you create a vacuum. And to quote the Tibetan, which is really a scientific axiom and not really anything original from the Tibetan, nature abhors a vacuum. When you create a vacuum, something will rush into that. If you create a vacuum and your gaze is downward, you will pull into your auric field all kinds of quote unquote crapola. If your visualization is upward towards the solar angel or the master's ashram, you will create a vortex that will create this downpouring. You have created a vacuum and something will come in from above to fill that vacuum. And as these higher energies pour down the throat of the vortex, which is really an inlet of a sphere, what happens is very magical. The power of this influx of greater light and sound, which is really what the solar angel is, it, out of its powerful nature, throws out any hindrances to the outer periphery of your aura. And then later, when you bring in even more powerful light from the soul, you can discharge it entirely. And then simultaneously, you're building in atomically all this new substance. And this technically is why the vortex is so important and why you need to understand even just the basics of it. Because you're going from text and visualized image to this free flowing up and down. It's sort of like an in-breath and out-breath. Okay, good. Are there any comments or additions anybody would like to add at this point?
I don't see any questions or hands.
I would like to say something, Dwayne. I believe on somewhere the instructions on viewing a symbol is, you know, there's like three levels. There's the outer symbol itself, and then upon meditation of that symbol, you try to acquiesce the quality which that symbol represents. And then, so as you were saying earlier, the thought form of the symbol kind of fades and you're more in touch with the feeling or quality behind the symbol. And then there's another level even behind that. And can you explain that third behind quality?
Well, this is interesting because every symbol is energy and force that's frozen temporarily for our creative use to understand that which is veiled that is not frozen. And when you study symbols, and DK does give instructions in several places about not only the importance of symbols, but actually gives symbols. And one symbol will veil another symbol. In other words, DK says that this idea of symbols is not just on the lower astral and mental planes, or even on just the higher and astral and mental planes. It goes on up on a soul level, a hierarchical level, even on a monadic level, there are cosmic symbols. And it's like Jacob's ladder. You take one rung at a time, and often the rungs of Jacob's ladder are shrouded in mystery, and they're shrouded in light. They're shrouded in creative energy, and as you ascend, each level is revealed to you. But the person behind you cannot see your revelation. To go back to another important quote by the Tibetan, where he says, the greater includes the lesser, but the lesser may not necessarily be aware of the greater. So we, and when DK says initiation is the entry into light, and all symbols are made of light. Now, some are more tangible and some are more ethereal. And here lies the potency of this last image that we shared. It's in motion and it will have an effect on your centers and it will stimulate you. And this is one of the objectives. Okay, are there any questions or comments that anybody would like to share?
I don't see any.
Okay, Walter, are you still with us?
I am indeed.
I wanted to showcase at least one of your incredible images that you have pulled together and put up there on Astrolog. And I would like you, rather than just read, the real deal is here. And I would like you to share a little bit about this image that we're going to see in animation, if you would like.
Well, the first thing to realize is that you can consider this multidimensional astrology, and we have our projections of astrological concepts in a chart, and that serves us well and can stimulate the intuition, but being able to see a more, in a sense, multidimensional, to use the word again, to understand really about what's going on in the space around us, is kind of like a what you would call a symbol. And that symbol can give us a more accurate visualization of the cosmos around us and the solar system in which we live and move and have our being.
This is, in my opinion, an incredible contribution. And I appreciate meeting you at these different conferences, Walter, and anyone can see that you have a brilliant fifth ray grounding, but this is taking it to a new level. And I think we're going to see more and more of this. And I know that you have other images, three-dimensional images on your site, and I would love to have people go there and sort of explore this, because you cannot look at this image through simply the lower mind. It demands a different type of recognition. Yes, you can analyze it through the lower mind at first, but eventually there'll be a shift and you'll say, wow, this is incredible. So thank you very much. Are there any comments that anyone would like to make on this, on Walter's contribution?
I don't see any. It is great, though. It is great, though. Thank you, Walter.
Thank you. We need new models. And these models are going to be alive. And even though they are still removed from the thing itself, they are closer, in my opinion, than text or the spoken word. So let's just go to another contributor. And that's Linda Vogler. And in this next image that I'm going to bring up on the entire screen is an image of sevens. And I saw it as the seven schemes, chains, globes, rounds. It can be root races, sub-races. It can be the seven, everyone knows, is such a magical number. It's like a fractal. It just, according to Tibetan, goes on infinitely, either up or down the scale. And let me bring it up. You see some of these, is I think it's in Cosmic Fire, and they're great, and they're more technical than this. And we do need the technical black and white ones sort of as a foundational point of reference. But one day, there will be artists that will come forward, and they will be able to take many of these principles and laws of the Age of Aquarius that have been laid out by Blavatsky and Alice Bailey, and maybe new ones that are coming. In other words, when people say there's a third phase to run, that yes, it's coming in 2025, but you have to remember the Tibetan has also said that there has to be continuity between these different contributors, that HPB in many respects seamlessly moves into the works of Alice A. Bailey. Yes, I know there are differences in some of the language and definitions are different, and they were different people, but what is this third phase going to look like in 2025? I would like to make the statement that some of this can be filtering down to those who are telepathically sensitive to their soul's impulse in the Master's Ashram. Yes, we may have to wait till 2025 for the full impact of that, but some of this is filtering through now, and some of this is going to be in new ways of presenting the same material. In other words, you can't reinvent the perennial philosophy or occult truths. They are the foundation, the rock upon which everything is built. But humanity at this time, historically, is crying out for new presentations and new ways of looking at these ancient truths. Not everybody is going to sit down and read 24 volumes of DK's teachings. And for those who can, I applaud that and I support that. But a lot of the younger generation are more visual. And we will see. Okay, now, this is Stephen Pugh's site. For any of those of you who have not been and explored that, he talks about occult cosmology, the seven ray cycles. He talks about zodiacal meditations. It's a fantastic site to visit and see how he has spent a whole lifetime charting these different ray cycles that move in and out. Some are very long. They're considered major cycles. Others are more intermediate, and others are minor. And we have worked together, Stefan and I, and I'm hoping in the future to be able to take his wonderful contribution and animate it. In other words, what a wonderful visual to see the ascent and descent, the rising of power or influence and its descent, the overlapping of ray influences visually. And then last in this little series here is just sort of a hint of where I think these animations are going to go. Again, major cycles with the larger arcs and orbs, intermediate cycles, and then lesser cycles. And we are on these cycles. We are cells within the body of these great beings, these monads and souls and integrated personalities that are riding the peaks and troughs of these immense waves. And they're in a state of movement. They're flowing. They're not static. And this is one of the things that DK says we have to recognize, that all this foundational material of building in the lower mind needs to be eclipsed by a more intuitive perception. Any comments on Linda Vogler, Stephen Douglas Pugh, or any one of the images?
I don't see anything.
Okay. Now, this next one you'll note has MDR. We all know who that is. Without his endless persistence and devotion to the ageless wisdom teachings in so many facets. Thank you, Rose, for correcting my misspelling, which no doubt are prolific. We would not be here, and I would not be able to show this next one, which is devoted and given to him as a gift. And it simply is based on an excerpt from esoteric astrology where the Tibetan is outlining the potency of four constellations, four great constellations, and their evolutionary importance, and how they, by this pentagram, all point to the receptivity, or I should say, pour their life down into the earth plane. And the key quote here, in my own italics, is when visualizing these diagrams, plural, the symbol should be seen in rapid revolution. When Alice Bailey did her telepathic work with the Tibetan, which to me astonishes and astounds me every time I pick up one of his books, one of their books, and read deeper and deeper into these mysteries. But I have often thought, what would it be like if Alice Bailey came at a time historically where she had the internet and the information highway and high-speed access, and she had access to living symbols, computer animation? Wouldn't it be a little different? And I think that's where I try to make my small contribution, is through the art field, but also not just art as beauty and culture or civilization, but art that is invocative, art that is equally occult symbolism. So, when visualizing these diagrams, the symbol should be seen in rapid revolution. Now, it's not possible at this time for me to reproduce that in exactitude, but I have come across on the internet, on YouTube, an advertisement that actually shows a five-pointed star emerging sort of out of the darkness. Now, this is sort of a difficult image because it happens so fast, it's hard to visually capture it. So I'm going to do it two, three, maybe even four times. It only takes 2 or 3 seconds. But I want everybody to move into their mini meditation mode, sound and om on the high mental plane, and I want you to feel these four constellations pouring down their living life in this time of transition and change, and see how it may be actually happening on the inner planes. Again, any image is far removed from the truth, but it nevertheless invokes a sense of direction. We need to have the pull of direction. So, taking a deep breath, breathe into this, sounding the om. And again, we're going to do it a second time. Third time, I find that incredibly invocative. Yes, all five sounds, colors of those five points are not represented here, and somebody like Justin Wilkinson could do a far better job in one day may, but it gives us a doorway, in my opinion, that's just a little broader or a little wider than simply reading about it. I recall going to the Arcane School when they were at the United Nations Plaza in the 70s and meeting Mary Bailey and telling her that I would like to contribute as an artist by taking many of the images and descriptive phrases the Tibetan uses in his works, particularly in the old commentary or the stanzas of Dien, and rendering them, making them visual. Well, her comment was a very classic one. She said, yes, I can see the value of that, but much more practical work may need to be done first. And as the great wheel turns, here I am, quite a few years later, still plugging away, and yes, trying to keep my feet on the ground and keep the horizontal service flowing, because a vertical alignment without boots on the ground is simply not what the hierarchy wants. And it's not how high you fly, it's how you can ground it. And I love the quote by Henry David Thoreau, who says, it's all right to build castles in the sky, just be sure to build foundations underneath them. So, are there any comments on this rotating star? And people on cell phones or tablets may have difficulty seeing this. I don't have difficulty because I have a huge screen.
Duane?
Yes.
You do have a comment. It's from Roz, and it was actually before you showed the star, but she said these images are wonderful because they bypass the thought.
Yes. The thought is important as a foundation, but we need to accelerate our alignment. To me, it's like a rocket taking off. You can drive your rusty bike down the paths of life. You can even get a Maserati that'll go 160, but you can get onto Elon Musk's SpaceX and you can literally fly. And this is one of the things that has impressed me about animations, if they're used in the right context. Otherwise, it can be just phenomena. It can be pure astral phenomena. But we are in a sacred environment here. We have created a magical chalice, and we may be on the opposite ends of the planet, but for this moment, we are at one, and we're thinking along the same lines.
Duane, we also have a comment by RS. He has his hand up, so you're, I believe, unmuted. If you'd like to go ahead.
Viola Petit-Neil, in her book Through the Curtain, described a need for a new definition of space and time. And her definition relates space to the sequence of sound. Sound, as it precipitates, it forms patterns and shape. And my understanding of what I have perceived so far is this essential principle of sound being a sequence A space being a sequence of sounds is what this visual attempt is all about. This visual attempt also relates to time, and viola relates time to the harmonic musical principles, which can also be explained mathematically and geometrically. And this is also taking place in some of your visualizations. So the consideration of redefining some of our terms is necessary.
Excellent. Excellent. Anyone else like to make a comment?
Yes, we have a comment from Suzanne. She says, I like to think of the cornucopia effect, the grape in the bottom to the unending expansive wealth of the fruits that continue to pour in.
Excellent. The cornucopia, the life more abundantly, the horn of plenty that keeps giving unconditionally. And DK states that when the centers are open, the ability to serve is unconditional. It's spontaneous. It's not, oh, I think I'm going to do this good deed or that good deed, which in its proper place is good. It is, I cannot help myself. I see world need, I pour out onto humanity the appropriate healing light. Excellent. Cornucopia. Love that image. That is the image of the vortex. Excellent. Any other comments?
I don't see any at this time.
HBB and DK affirm that space is an entity and time is the duration that entity has chosen to work out some aspect of its plan or spiritual will. And everything is alive in the theory of holism. And initiation is nothing more than the recognition that we are everywhere, that we are one. These are not just trite New Age slogans, that they are the very cornerstone and the basis of all spiritual development. You cannot harm another who is you. It's no longer, oh, there but for the grace of God I go. It's there I go. There we go, and we are at one. Any additional comments?
Yes. Roz says, when singing and in a meditative state, I see shapes and colors and lights. It only happens when singing sacred songs.
Excellent. DK points out that there's going to be a new use of the voice, new techniques of culture and harmonic development of not only singing, but all the arts. But singing most closely approximates even more than the visual, and the two together are literally profound. And we each have a personality note and a soul note, and we may not realize it, but the type of music we listen to or the different movements or passages within these compositions will reflect those notes, and that's why we're attracted to them. And yes, singing with the right interior concentration is the early formation of the science of mantra, which is really a subsidiary science of astrology, the science of the centers, laya yoga, and triangles, and a number of other lesser ones. So music, very, very important. Music is invokes a sense of the music of the spheres, that we're all a note in this great symphony, and we have to recognize that note and follow it back to its source. We're not just a violin. We're not just a percussion instrument or a brass instrument. we are the entire symphony. And all these vortices and spheres that I'm constantly talking about are made up of lighted substance and sound. Any other comments?
Yes, Roz adds that the golden vortex shows the beauty of the oneness of all things, the way everything blends into one, never separating, always uniting.
Excellent. That's beautiful. It's not only scientifically accurate, it's appeals to the heart. It appeals to the emotions. And we need to have more and more of that drenching, downpouring of group life, which is really love, intelligent love guided by the divine will. Thank you. Excellent. Any more comments?
That's all I see right now.
Okay, excellent. I think we'll do one more animation and be open to some more comments. And I'm going to skip right through and go down to, let's see, let's do this one right here. Okay, now, this is a perfect vortex, and it's sort of a cutaway so that you can see inside of it. See how the vortex is faced with triangles. Energy coming from the higher subplanes is pure photonic fire. It has no form at all. It's like a stream or a river of fiery energy. As it comes down through the rays and planes, and I'm using language that is so limited, but I know of no other way, it occultly cools and begins to crystallize. It's very much alive, and it's very much in motion. And the outer walls of the vortex are sort of like a semi-permeable membrane. And energy can go out, and it can go in, and it breathes, it palpitates. But the majority of the energy pours down through the upper northernmost point of the sphere, down the throat of the vortex, and you can see as it pours down, it becomes restricted, and then as it reaches a midway point, it fans out and it turns into a second type of vortex, and then it eventually comes around to the outer periphery and then is drawn back up along the sides, and we're going to see that in a moment. But I want the group to pay particular attention to the innermost center of this vortex cutaway. Now, do you notice the vesica Pisces? It's sort of oblong. This is the birth of a new vortex. To go back to earlier statements that energy literally wells up from within itself, and it can do that because we are multiple beings. We have a physical etheric, an astral, a mental, a causal field, the solar life itself, a monadic life. And all of these, although hidden, are potentially seeds that are always waiting to emerge and to exhibit and exert their influence over our lower instruments. They are really who we are. The personality is but a mere shadow. So imagine this image seven times, like the skins on an onion, but each one is more ethereal as you go into the center of the composition. And as energy from the monad passes down through the upper triad, Atmabuddhi Manas, down through the soul and its three aspects, and then down into the personality, you have seven spheres, seven atoms, and they all interface, or to use a classic word in physics, they nest. How can all these different parts of us nest together, each one giving a different contribution, but not violating the integrity of the other. That's an interesting mystery that's hard to understand by simply reading text. But by looking at an image, particularly the animation I'm going to show in a few seconds, it just reveals so much. Okay, so now we're going to go to, but before we go to the image, I want everybody, this is sort of going to be the closing meditation, and I want you to really breathe into this and feel the vibratory quality, the light. And we're going to put on a little sound and sound your Om on the high mental plane, and with an active mind, allow some part of that mind to become passive to the downflow of the group life, because really it's not just your own soul or angel, it's the entire field of the group that we're trying to symbolize here. So all together, breathing in, sounding the Om. Energy pours in from a higher dimension, passes through the body of some entity. It can be an atom, it can be your physical body, it can be any one of your personality bodies, it can be the solar angel itself. It passes down through the sphere, exits at the bottom, and then it climbs back up again, only to go through another cycle on a higher turn of the spiral, because the energy pouring down from the higher level actually is enhanced by its descent into matter. Now, this is a real paradox, because you think the light of the soul descends, it becomes diminished. Yes. But when the incarnation is through and the personality is integrated, the soul returns to its higher plane with all that higher light that it drew from the personality instruments. A real and an immense paradox. So this is a fitting ending to our first presentation, and I'm going to contract this, and I want to get any comments as we any questions or comments as we come to an end.
We have one from Frederick. He says, gratitude for this great awakening.
Well, thank you. We are all very privileged to be able to participate in this wonderful gift. And the more we can share, the more all of our hands are strengthened to do greater service. Any other comments? This has given you a bird's eye view of sort of what we're going to explore over the next presentations. And I apologize maybe for zipping through a little too fast, maybe not clarifying a number of different things, but I'm trying to awaken something more than just information. And it's all right if some of these concepts you didn't get. It's not like you're going to be tested. All you have to do is get one keen insight, and it can radically change your perceptions of yourself, the great work of the masters, and this wonderful Moya School Federation that we are a part of. Any other questions or statements?
Yes. Go ahead, please, Victor.
Hi there, everyone. Thanks very much for this presentation. When I was looking at these animations, particularly the one that you have on the screen now, my eyes might have been playing tricks on me. You were talking about the energy moving in at the top and going out at the bottom, but by shifting, I don't know what happened, but it looked to me like the energy was going in both directions.
Excellent. Well, here's a case where you are seeing more of the thing itself than the presented image. And I applaud that. And this is the purpose of this work. Really, when we study the vortex, we realize there are many vortices. And DK has stated that there's major and minor vortices. There's vortices on the planet itself, major inlets and outlets, the hierarchy, the solar angel, even the personality. And there is the descent of Fohat, which creates what we call the father vortex, or the will. And then you have simultaneously the mother vortex, or the receptive vortex of involution, that's going in the opposite direction. And we're not showing that here. We're only giving you sort of a brief idea. And thank you for that, because that's what we need to see. We need to see into it. We need to see into it. What is it veiling? Any other statements?
Yes. Please go ahead, Julia.
Hello, can you hear me?
I sure can.
Good. I just made sense of that statement, the fifth feeds on the fourth.
The fifth feeds on the fourth. Beautiful.
The kingdom feeds on the fourth. I think it's in Rays and Initiations.
Yes. Excellent. That is a mantric phrase that can only be understood when you feel that expansion from the fifth ray into the intuitive, because the fourth ray is the embodiment of intuition and the liberation through love. And in the early stages, it can be one thing, but as it matures, it just literally opens up the disciple to the downpouring of such creativity and compassion for everything. And thank you, that's excellent. The fifth feeds off the fourth. Okay, and this may be history for me because I'm only 3 minutes over. And I want to thank again BL and all of the other tireless workers from the Moya School, which are many, that have allowed this presentation to take place. And there's one more comment, please go ahead.
Go ahead, Julie.
Any comments?
No more from me, from Julia. No more.
Okay, excellent. And if you feel you'd like to email me or share additional thoughts or comments, I am available and may take a few days to return your inquiry or your email, but feel free to do that. Okay, we've completed our first presentation, and I appreciate all of you taking your valuable time to share with us and to be a part of this group dynamic. It's your life, it's your energy, and we all need to become mirrors of each other. So with that, I'm going to sign off with love and gratitude and peace.
Thank you. Good night, everybody.